The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We are back. The final hour of the program is here. And for a week and a couple of days, we've been talking about the CFP. And in his latest piece for Sports Illustrated, our guest Ross Dellinger gets into great detail on how we have reached this important moment. Ross, thank you so much for the time. The headline, Inside 27 Months of Playoff Expansion Discussions and the Arduous Path Ahead. Ross, quite a piece, as always. For those who have not or are not familiar, where are we right now, and where does your reporting indicate that we are going?
Yeah, it was interesting to dive in and spend basically a week's worth of time last week talking to each of the decision makers, right? The power players in college sports, the 11 or the 10 conference commissioners plus Jack Swarbrick from Notre Dame. They're the 11 member CFP committee, basically management committee that controls the path of the playoff and the future of the playoff. And we spoke to all but one of them, and it was interesting to get feedback from each, and it helped kind of paint the picture of where things are right now. And Paul, we're closer than probably most think in a potential playoff expansion, because this has been going on. The CFP working group has been working on this for 2 years, actually over 2 years. January 2019, they began working on models and pouring over data about potential expansion. And that working group, of course, includes SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And I talked to Greg as well for this story. And it's interesting how close they are. They expect, according to Jack Swarbrick, who's also in the working group, they expect to present a model or models to the full committee of commissioners in June. And from there, the full committee would make a recommendation potentially to the next tier, which is the board of managers, which is made up of presidents and chancellors across the NCAA, 11 of them. And so we feel closer than we all thought. It was a pretty incredible 27-month secret that they kept, this working group.
Ross, we've all heard the different proposals or reported proposals. And in your reporting, and I know that it's difficult to chisel it down to what the best or most likely is, but what do you think? Where do you think they are and how do they get to a resolution, and what likely will that resolution be?
Well, I think the most, just from speaking to these decision makers, the best possibility, or most likely possibility, is a playoff in between 8 and 12 teams. It's pretty obvious that that's kind of where they are, that it just appears to be the most likely. And that playoff would, again, most likely, just from talking to them, come with automatic qualifiers for the Power Five in an automatic spot for the Group of Five, which is very important. Five of the 11 members represent a Group of Five conference, and it seemed to be part of a which you might call necessary to have that Group of Five spot. It seems to be necessary to have that automatic qualifying Group of Five spot. So the decision, really, as I got into in that story, Paul, is if you do have that six automatic qualifying model, that we have each of the Power Five conference champion gets in a group, the best Group of Five team, then the question is, how many at-large spots do you have? Do you have two, which would be an 18 playoff? Do you have four, which would be 10? Do you have six at-large spots, which would be a 12-team playoff? And I can tell you, at least one commissioner believes that having two at-large spots just isn't enough. At-large teams. So this is going to be the hardest part of this. You know, a lot of people have said that, and certain commissioners have said the hardest part of this is going to be the ESPN contracts and contracts with the Bulls, renegotiating them because they're halfway through this deal. Some have said the hardest part is scheduling. You know, when do you have these extra rounds? How do you fit it into this small window in December? But really, Paul, I think the bottom line, the hardest part of this is going to be a format. It's going to be the number of teams in automatic qualifiers and who gets them. Everybody's got to come to an agreement. Bob Boolsby told me this is not a, where you need a majority of votes, right? You can get outvoted 6-5 and this thing passes through. This is not that at all. You have to have all 11 agree on board, and that's going to be the most difficult.
Let's start with the SEC Commissioner, Greg Sankey. What did you learn from him?
Well, Greg was great. He gave me upwards of 30 minutes, and we went kind of round and round talking about this thing. He didn't divulge much what the working group was working on, of course, but he did speak to his feelings, and they haven't changed. I think his quote in the story is four works, it's working, and, you know, it will work moving forward. Now, to the question on is he against expansion, although he gave that quote about the four, he said he doesn't, at least on the expansion topic, he doesn't have a position right now, and that he's on this working group to listen to ideas, give feedback. He respects everybody's opinions. But it's clear, Paul, out of the 11 members, the one that might have to be convinced more than any other is Greg Sankey of expanding. It's clear when you're talking to other commissioners and talking to him, it is clear he has been the most publicly outspoken for the current model, in support of the current model.
And other than the fact that it's obviously working, what are his biggest impediments to expanding?
Well, I think his big impediments are the same as a lot of others, even though, as you probably read in that story, 8 of the 10 members of the committee that we spoke to say that they're for expansion or at least open to it. So Greg was obviously one of the two, that did not say that he was for that. He, like I said earlier, he said that he didn't have a position. But I think even those who are for it and are open to it, they have issues, and they're same as Greg's. The schedule, where do you fit in an extra round or extra two rounds? The suggestion would be an extra round isn't that big a deal, right? Squeezing in between the conference championship games in the current semifinal date, the second, third week of December. But if you had a second round, right, if you had a second round game, where do you squeeze that in? Does everybody move up the season and play on week zero? Do you move back the championship game to mid-January? Then you get into the NFL playoffs competing with them. So the schedule is an issue. The amount of games, if you expand it to 12, if a team that played in the first round advanced to the championship game, they would have played 17 games. 12 regular season, 13 with a conference championship game, and then 4 in the playoff. And that's something Greg and I discussed, and something Nick Saban, I believe, on your show yesterday or last week noted was a concern of his. So it's – and then the other two things that I got into deeply in the story, the diminishing of the bowl system if you expand too much, and if you expand too much, the weakening of the regular season – that is probably the best regular season in American sports.
And as many commissioners have pointed out, including Commissioner Sankey, the conference championship game, which is part of the new ESPN agreement, gets diluted somewhat. But you mentioned ESPN in the article, and I think you quoted a commissioner saying that they would be licking their chops. They're in an acquiring mode right now, as we all know, NFL, NHL, and I think Bill Hancock was quoted saying, we have not consulted them yet, which is extraordinary to think that they're not in the loop somehow. But what are your thoughts on where ESPN fits in all this?
Yeah, this is a, you know, there's four steps to this process of kind of a path to expansion. If it were to be approved, there's four steps. The first is the working group presents a model, as I mentioned earlier, to the commissioners. The commissioners will then have to approve a model as the second step. And the board of managers, the presidents and chancellors, will have to approve that model or amend it. And the fourth step is TV contracts and the bowl contracts. And ESPN's a huge part of this. They're halfway through, the CFP is, halfway through a 12-year deal, a little over halfway through, 7 years into a 12-year deal with ESPN that runs through the 2025 football season. So it's interesting. One of the commissioners really broke it down for me in a great way, saying that ESPN and in the bowls, the six big bowls, New Year's six bowls, which the CFP, by the way, has an individual contract with each, they would have to renegotiate, they're in the best position right now because they can just say no. They have to agree to this playoff. So the ball is in their court, kind of. Whatever the CFP presents them, they have to agree. So they're in a good bargaining position. They have leverage. So I think they would want to be a part of it, and it would secure their spot as hosting the first big playoff, first expanded playoff. So, it depends on who you talk to. Bowlesby was on the record with me about how complex that the ESPN contract and the bowl contracts would be. There's a lot of complexity, Paul, in the six individual bowl contracts, because as you know, historically these bowls are linked to a conference, the Sugar Bowl with the SEC, the Orange Bowl with the ACC, the Rose Bowl, of course, with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. And these bowls want to keep their connection, right, with their conference. So it came in a little murky there. But the bottom line is these bowls, they have the leverage. And I think from talking to several people in the industry, they'd be on board with it. And so as one commissioner told me, who obviously doesn't think it's very complex, these potential renegotiating, he said that will take care of itself, that the whole contract that would take care of itself. They're focused on much more difficult questions, which I mentioned, scheduling, format, things like that.
Yeah, I have about 3,000 other questions, but we'll bring you back because the NIL, the Austin, all these other things that you've been writing about nonstop are out there. In summary, considering this is going on and the other two, I mean, can you ever, maybe outside of the crazy expansion summer of what was it, 10 or 11, do you ever remember so many unknowns in college athletics?
Gosh, no. Oliver Luck, former NCAA executive in West Virginia AD. I was on the phone with him a week or two ago, and he said the next 4 months or next 3 months is going to be the most cataclysmic, in NCAA history. It really is, from NIL to the one-time transfer to these playoff expansion discussions, Paul. Lots changing, right? The Alston case, as you mentioned, the NCAA's amateurism model could be just completely crumbling. They're going to weaken it on their own with NIL, as they probably should, right? They probably should have years ago. But Alston might come in and even cripple it even more. College sports, as we know it, for a lot of ways, is going to be changing over the next few years, and it might not be what we like, but that's the way it's heading. I think the games are still going to be the games. The crowd's going to still come out, but it is going to be different.
Can't wait. Ross, I know you. I don't know what your vacation plans are, but I'd get it in quickly. Great to have you with us. It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for dropping by.
Thanks, Paul.
Ross Dellinger, nobody better. I mean, this guy is amazing. Talking to that many commissioners on the record. We will take a break. I think you, now that the draft is over, I think you see the template for the next couple of months. We don't have to think too hard about where our subject matter will be. Thanks for being here again, Ross, and we are coming right back with your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. Let's check out Mike next in Texas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say real quick that you are the epitome of your profession. The way you handled Mitch earlier, just the way you handle all of your callers, I respect you tremendously, and you're just good down home guy. And thank you for what you do,
Mike. Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to say that I am so fortunate, and I'm just so glad that I'm an Aggie. That Texas A&M came into the SEC conference years ago. I was a little skeptical when they did. I'm old enough to be a Southwest Conference guy, and I just remember those classic days of that conference. But now that we're in the SEC conference, I'm so excited because to me it is the best conference in the nation, especially in college football. And I know that you had written something here recently about Jimbo Fisher and the culture he's provided at A&M and whatnot. And I just kind of want to get your opinion on where you think the next 2 to 3 years are going at Texas A&M and Texas A&M football.
Yeah, I don't see – I mean, you could have a slight deviation this year without Kellen Mond. I hear pro and con. I think the team overall may be a little better. But having Alabama at home could make up for that. But I think he's built such a base that you're not going to see any significant drop. If anything, can it be better? Yeah, I think A&M's capable of winning it all.
Well, I agree with you, and I just the one thing that concerns me and. Trust me, I'm a diehard Aggie, but the environment that we play in, the stadium itself, is just, when you compare it to the other SEC stadiums where, you have the Swamp, and you have Death Valley, and then you have Georgia, the Hedge, we just have such a sterile-looking stadium. I wonder if that's a detriment to us.
Yeah, Mike,
that's a weird question.
Mike, it's interesting. You understand the terrain out there. It's a little bit different than I have driven to Kyle Field many Saturday morning at 5:45, and it's a strange sight because of the topography, but. It may look strange, but you tell me. When the Aggies are on the verge of a big win on a Saturday afternoon, can you tell me someplace that's any louder or more electric?
I couldn't agree with you more. It is the best atmosphere for a college game, being in that stadium. Those Aggies are some of the best fans in college football, and I agree with you. Best fans and loyal fans.
No, they're amazing. Thank you very much. I got to know as the Aggies were coming into the league, I was able to come out there for something, and I learned a lot about Aggieland on that weekend, and what you said is 100% correct. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Mr. B in Arkansas. If I can hit the buttons right, we'll get going. Hey, B, how are you?
I'm pretty good, sir. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot.
I just called in today to get some honest feedback. There have been a handful of bills gone through some states about trans athletes, and I've supported Pee Wee football, Little League softball, and even managed a men's softball team here locally. And I don't find that that's typically a lot of the reasons why I have been stated behind the bills are the motives for that young athletes to participate. So I wanted to get some feedback from you. If you really thought the NCAA is really going to deny campuses the opportunity to field championship playoffs, because I know Arkansas is pretty good in baseball, softball, gymnastics,
court track. Yeah, Mr. B, I mean, the NCAA is going to be powerless here on July 1st, and it really depends on, you know, the Austin case and the NIL are different, but it's the psychology of one may impact the other, because if this Austin case just essentially rules the NCAA's claim is totally false, and it opens the Pandora's box to athletes being paid, it changes everything overnight. And the NIL is complicated because if we don't have a uniform bill, which I'm not sure we're going to, it puts every state under a different jurisdiction. But change is coming. I'm not trying to, you know, quote a song from the 60s. But it is right around the corner, and I just don't think any of us know exactly how it's going to look. Appreciate the call. Let me check in with David, who is up next. Hey, David, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how you doing this afternoon?
We're doing well. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to call in a little bit about this NIL business and throw a couple of things out there, if I may. First thing is that I'll say that I'm not in favor of it, but this seems to be something that's coming down the pike anyway. But I'm wondering why people seem to talk about the players as though they're not currently receiving some pretty good compensation for what they're doing.
Right.
According to my own research, I'm figuring that they're getting something like $45,000 a year for playing football.
Well, David, they're not being paid $45,000. It may be worth $45,000, or it may be worth more, but they're not getting a check for that.
No, they're not. But they're getting that kind of value for what they're doing.
No, that's a fair point.
The second thing is, what are you going to do about agents? Who's going to represent these 18 to 21 year olds when they go head to head with Adidas or Under Armour or Nike or whoever, and negotiating how much they're going to get paid for their name, image, or likeness?
If you know the answer to that, let everybody else know, because I don't know. I mean, you're 100% correct about this, and all I'm trying to say is this: that you're making a tremendous amount of success of sense. However, we don't live in a rational world. Just put on the news every night. And like it or not, agree with it or not, it's here. And yeah, now it's just simply a matter of how it's distilled from the top down. And the fact that it's May, 3rd, and this is under 2 months away, it's a big problem.
Well, it is. It's just, I think there's a lot of people just simply haven't thought about all the ramifications of what may happen.
No, it's the oldest line in the world, David, the unintended consequences. And I think the leaders of college athletics have thought about it, and that's why they've resisted it for so long. But the times are changing. And, you know, I'm not sure we're going to be able to recognize the sport, but, you know, this is what everyone has called for and wanted, and here it is.
Well, you're right, and like I say, I don't agree with it, but we'll just have to see how.
No, it's. I mean, I do my best to steer us clear of the political issues of the day because they're so divisive. But that's why that's why this country is divided down the middle, and it's been like that for a considerably long period of time, and depending on your age or where you live or where you're from or how you were brought up, you're going to have a completely different view of issues than maybe your close friend or even a relative or wife or cousin or brother. Anyway, we're up against a break. I'll quit pontificating. And we still have 30 minutes to go. We hope you'll give us a ring at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome back. Let's get to the calls. And John is up next in St. Louis. So, hello, John.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today, sir?
We are doing great. What about you?
Not too bad. Hey, I got a kind of a different slant on things. I hear all this talk about going on in SEC, and I want to talk a little bit about something that's not pleasant, but still a very much a perception of the SEC by a lot of people who don't live down south. And, Neil Young talked about this stuff 50 years ago.
Yeah, hold on a second, John. I heard Mr. Young sing about her. I heard Neil put her down. But as Leonard Skinner said, I hope Neil Young will remember a Southern man don't need him around.
Well, I'm still talking about some stuff, Paul. You have to admit, if you're from the outside looking in, okay, and you look at the people that are in the bands at the games, and you look at the people who are the cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of diversity there.
Listen, okay. I can't give you an absolute response to that, but I bet if you look pretty hard this fall, you'll see it. And by the way, John, when you go to a football game, do you go to check out the band or do you check out the players on the field? And if you check out the players on the field, I think you'll find a lot of diversity. We lost John, but I grew up listening to Neil Young sing about the South. And what John doesn't understand is that that's irrelevant to 2021. And for anyone to bring up a song that was written, in 1970? And how that has anything to do with today, 51 years later, disregarding everything that has occurred, is insane. It really is. Anyway, thanks for the call, John. Cat Daddy is now. I'm trying to remember what somebody called you earlier. What did they? How did they describe Cat Daddy? They gave you a new name, Catfish.
Catfish, I love catfish. I'll be all right with me. How you doing, Big Paul? You looking good and sounding good today.
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I would like to get your assessment of the NFL draft and pick the teams you think won and pick the teams you think came out losers, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I watched most of it. I'm trying to remember the team I thought did the best. Who was it? Thought the Saints did well. Who else did well? How did you rank it?
Well, I thought the Jaguars did pretty good.
Yeah, well.
I think Chicago did pretty good.
Chicago did good.
Yeah, I think I was real surprised about the South Carolina board. It went sooner than we all thought it was going to.
Well, you know, the Panthers were looking for someone else. He got taken, I think, by Detroit right before that. So, but he was always, I will agree with you, and I know Jay Horn's father talked about it. That pick did not get a lot of attention.
No, sure didn't. And I'll tell you one thing. I don't understand why the Carolina Panthers hadn't tried to secure more Clemson and South Carolina, North Carolina, and you know, ACC and players to help boost their
well, because they because they have a billionaire owner that doesn't understand that, even though he's just moved the team to South Carolina.
Yes, Lord have mercy. Well, I wish you all the best of luck. I wish you the best of luck. Enjoyed your show today. And I tell you what, it feels more like we're going to have a regular college football season this year, and I am so excited.
I hear you. And by the way, I didn't mean he moved the team. He moved the team's headquarters to Rock Hill, South Carolina. The team's still where it's always been. Let me check out, where am I here? I'm just, Tom is up next in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, guy?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
Fine. Two things. One is some good news for Florida fans out of Western Carolina. And no, Alabama is not giving up football for tiddlywinks. Kerwin Bell, the 1984 SEC Player of the Year, is the new head coach for the Western Carolina Catamounts.
Is he really?
And yes, he is. He is going to be, he's had quite a career so far down in the Division III's and NAIA world. But he's had quite a offensive powerhouse wherever he's coached. All he really needs is a couple of zip code receivers, and that will be quite the powerhouse to watch. So for Florida fans, Western Carolina is the place to look when you're not happy.
Well,
the
I'm glad to hear that. One other question. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the other thing, Paul, from listening to what you and other callers have been talking about with CFP, NIL, the Supreme Court hearing, and all this July 1st, et cetera, why did the NCAA think this was a good time to extend Emmert's contract? I am totally confused on that, and I would really appreciate any insights you might have.
Yeah, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up, and because I'm sure you've read the reaction, which has been
yes,
quite negative. I think it's a classic case. It's a tired old cliche, but I'm going to use it anyway. I think it's often said that you'd rather dance with the devil you know than the devil you don't. And they, in other words, they know they can control Emmert. They know he won't do anything that they don't want him to do, as opposed to bringing someone in that will decide that I'm going to change the world. We saw a little bit of that last year in the Big Ten. They hired a new commissioner, and he thought he was going to outsmart everyone by shutting college football down in the Big Ten, and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah. Well, you know, they might be able to control Emmert, but you know, if you don't have, given everything that's going, swirling around outside the walls of the NCAA, you need somebody who knows what they're doing inside the walls, because suddenly the castle's going to get breached, and then it'll be an interesting, you know, we won't be talking 5 years from now, you know.
No, you're right.
Remember when the NCAA was something that was important?
Tom, and not only, on top of that, his number one assistant just got hired by the White House to run, or to be the assistant or the undersecretary or the deputy secretary of the Veterans Association, the Veteran Affairs. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That guy was his right-hand man and his lawyer, Donald Remy. I don't think the NCAA will exist by the time Emmert reaches the end of that contract.
Well, the fact that this number two got hired for the VA at a high level says a lot to me. I'm retired Army, and the VA hospital here in Asheville is very good, and I use it. So it looks like they might have an empty cupboard by the time things really get nasty.
Yeah, Tom, it looks to me like he saw the handwriting on the wall. Thank you very much for the call, and thank you for your courageous service to this country. We appreciate it. I think the presidents and the commissioners all look at Emmert as just as someone that, you stay in your office up there. We'll see you at the Final Four. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern. We'll be right back.